before I gavel in, let's make sure. I would like to go ahead and call this meeting of the House Transportation Committee to order at 1:33 in the p.m. Today is Thursday, March 18th. Present with us today are Representative McCabe, Representative Sponholz, Representative Hannon, Vice Chair Hannon, Representative Kronk, Representative Drummond, and myself, Chair Hopkins. Assisting us today are our recording secretary, Jamie Buhner, and our LIO moderator, Doug Bridges. Said it off the record, but I'll say it on the record now. Please make sure your phones are off. And also, for those participating remotely, please mute your microphones when you're not actively speaking so that we can get a clear recording of the proceedings for posterity. All of today's presentations are page numbered, so I'd ask that our presenters and members please reference the page number of the presentation you are presenting or posing a question on. For those listening at home, all of today's presentations can be found by visiting akleg.gov, clicking on the Committees tab, selecting Transportation, under the House Committee header, selecting the Meetings tab, and selecting today's date. Are there any questions before we proceed? Does not look like it. Do I have anybody online? No, just the committee members, department people. Today's meeting concerns two things dealing with the Alaska Marine Highway System. We'll begin with a quick word from Speaker Stutes and her staff regarding House Bill 63, which we will then take up the three amendments to the bill offered by members of the committee, take public comment, and then look to see the will of the committee. Following our work on House Bill 63, we will hear a presentation from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on vessel replacement, budget, and planning for our state marine highway system. Are there any questions about any of that? All right. With us today are Speaker Stutes and her aide, Carrie Crocker. Representative Stutes, please put yourself on the record and let us know whatever you have to share about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and nice to see the committee once again. I'm Representative Louise Stutes out of Kodiak, and I'm delighted to be here. That's District 32. Thank you for this opportunity once again. We're here on House Bill 63, and I'm very excited about this bill. This bill it strengthens the governance for the Alaska Marine Highway System. We all know that the highway system has had its lumps over the last few years, and I think that this is a real good direction. One of the main issues of this bill that is addressed is the board, the governance board that is selected. And I'm excited about this because this bill requires people on this board to have marine experience in one capacity or another, which is crucial, I believe, in a successful operation. The members chosen for this board are chosen by different entities. There will be a certain number chosen by the governor, a certain number chosen by the House, a certain number chosen by the Senate, and these individuals, as I just stated, will have to have certain requirements in order to be eligible to be on this board. I know that there is a bill, I believe it's following this one, that is pretty much similar to ours. The difference is, one of the main differences from my perspective is the other bill allows the governor to choose all the board members, and I think having a little variety makes it a much more even board. So I'm excited, and I'm looking forward to moving this bill forward, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Representative. Mr. Crocker, put yourself on the record and add anything you'd like.
Kerry Crocker, staff to Representative Stutes. I really don't have much to add. I think it's a great bill. You know, it's going to be great for Alaska, and, you know, the diversity and the board is what's going to matter over time. And it's going to create, you know, hopefully some great long-term planning for the Marine Highway System.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? All right, seeing none, at this point we have three amendments to House Bill 63 proposed by members of the committee. I'll be looking to the makers of the amendments to make their motions, and then I'll object for purposes of discussion. We'll debate, take a vote, and proceed through all three amendments. Are there any questions as we go ahead on this? The amendments should be in your packet, provided by my committee aide. Starting with amendment number one, seeing no questions, unless there are. Vice Chair Hannon, can I have a motion for amendment number one?
Chair Hopkins, I move amendment number one.
Thank you, and I will object for purposes of discussion. Representative Hannon, would you like to speak to your amendment?
I will. So the amendment, first of all, was developed in consultation with the Speaker Stutz's office, so it's not a surprise to her, and I believe she supports these changes, and we view them as sort of clarifications. So the first section amends and specifies that there's going to be both a short-term and a comprehensive long-term plan, right? So you'll see that in section one, we're clarifying that, we're adding short-term every time that the comprehensive long-term plan is referenced. There is also then, starting on page two, following line 12, where the members of the board are delineated, the same definition, or no, actually the first one is that one representative of this new board would be a representative of an Alaska Native organization or tribe from a community that's served by the Alaska Marine Highways, and that person would be appointed by the governor. So of the governor appointees, one would be delineated a tribe or community member. Then, so that changes the number on line 13 from three public members to two, because we've just specified one of them above. Then bullet four and five, where you're delineating two members appointed by the Speaker and the Senate. And there was some confusion because it was the intent of the original sponsor that these are community members, not members of the legislature, but because that word member in the bodies is used so often. So we have reprised the same language that is used to describe the public members the governor is appointing, and it's used in both of those sections. So it would then be that the governor and the House appointees and the Senate appointees are all public members who have experience in marine business procurement practices, marine personnel management, commercial services options, ship maintenance, construction, repair, fleet strategy, reliability, regulatory compliance, or risk management. So all three selections of public members have that same qualification, but different appointing entities, governor, House, Senate. Then we jump down to page three, line 14, where we are moving sections of law, and we are going to the what exists currently is there is a comprehensive intermodal long-term plan, and we're going to add the short-term plan and the long-term plan we have into the department's intermodal plan. Right, that should be incorporated in. And I think that's the essence of the changes. There's some renumbering because of those changes after Section 8, because that was a Section 8 change. And I will note, just so anyone who is following it in the bill, the new Section 8 is a different area of statute, right, where so the bulk of the bill is taking place in statutes under Title 19. The new Section 8 is Title 44, where the Department of Transportation's intermodal plan obligations are. So just to not to make sure everybody knows where we're jumping around from. And then page three people to two on line 25. because we've specified earlier that one of them is a member of a Native organization or tribe appointed by the governor.
Does that conclude your description?
That concludes my description.
Thank you very much. I would like to turn to the bill sponsor and hear your opinions on this amendment, if you have any objections or support for it or questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stutes speaking. I'm thankful to the maker of this amendment. I think it's a clarifying amendment, and I think it gives better guidance. So I'm fully supportive of it.
Kerry Conker, staff to Representative Stutes. The amendment's great in the planning language, adding in that short-term plan. It'll be done annually. That makes a big difference, and you know that we incorporated that from the governor's bill. Also, requiring the commissioner of DOT to incorporate the comprehensive long-range plan outlined by the board into the long-range transportation plan by the state, I think, is a critical piece of this legislation. It's going to ensure that the board is heard and its recommendations are acted upon.
Thank you very much. Are there further questions or debate or comments on amendment number one? Hearing none, I remove my objection to amendment number one. Is there further objection? Seeing none, amendment one, number one to House Bill 63 has been adopted. Thank you very much. Next, we have amendment number two. Representative McCabe, can I have a motion for amendment number two?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number two.
Thank you. I will object for purposes of discussion. Representative McCabe, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Sure. I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number two, it prevents the possibility of stacking the board with union or retired union personnel, such as the Police Advisory Council, which has a bunch of retired policemen that are on the board as general members. So kind of want to do the same thing. As we have seen with our discussion with all the commissioners in the last few weeks, personnel are the most expensive cost of doing business. The Perry system itself admits that 65% of the of their costs are employee costs. This huge cost in personnel is caused in part by the union's ability to negotiate favorable contracts in the oligopoly that the Alaska Ferry system actually is. So many boards throughout the country have union or retired union officials or members serving on them, and those members do serve a very important function in giving the union employees a voice on the board. But it's unusual to see more than one member from a union or with a union background serving on an advisory or management board. So I ask you that you consider my amendment, which will do little more than ensure that unions do not take complete control of the board, specifically thinking about the four members that the legislature can assign, because they are sort of general members, and it could I see it's open for we could put four union members on there in addition to, or retired union members in addition to, the one union member that is currently mentioned in the bill. So I'm just trying to prevent overstacking the board with union or retired union members. Probably the line numbers a little bit in my amendment will change based on Rep. Hannon's, but I think you all get the drift. So,
thank you, Representative McCabe. That concludes your comments.
It does. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair, to the maker of the amendment. Was there a legal memo with this from our legal drafting with any cautions of a discriminatory practice of banning a specific class of people?
I'm not sure the union is a union member is considered a class of people.
But specifying that they can't be, you know, cannot now be or have ever been a member of the union.
Through the chair, no, there was not. They didn't say anything other than here's your amendment, and there was really no comment like that.
Representative McCabe, a question for myself. Is this a member of any union specifically? So right. Could a current or retired police officer serve on this, or a current or retired member of a public employee union from a city impacted by a municipal government union member who impacted by the AMHS changes be a member under your amendment?
good question, and I think that as originally designed, it was meant to be the unions that are served or that serve as representation for the marine highway system, which would be Master's Mates and Pilots and Inland Boatmen's Union, currently, I believe. So, I certainly could add instead of depends on how you want to do it. I could make an amendment to it, or you could, but we could say members of the union currently serving or representing the employees of the Alaska Marine Highway System. How do you want to do it?
Representative McCabe, it is your amendment.
So why don't we, I'll make a motion to amend my amendment to include, instead of a union, to replace a union with the unions that represent employees of the Alaska Marine Highway System.
Yes, brief it is. So we have a conceptual amendment to amendment number two that has been proposed by Representative McCabe. The conceptual amendment to amendment number two would read, it would insert at the end of amendment number two, lines 2, 5, and 8, union, after the word union, it would start with currently representing workers employed by the Alaska Marine Highway System. Representative McCabe, that is the motion you have moved. The conceptual amendment to amendment number two has been moved. I'd object for purposes of discussion. Second amendment.
No.
Brief it is. Amendment to amendment number two that I read in does require a second. Do I have a second for the motion?
I'll second.
Representative Kronk has seconded the motion. Representative McCabe, would you like to speak to the conceptual amendment?
Well, I think we've already spoken about it. So this language was only intended to cover those employees that are the unions that represent the employees that currently work for the Marine Highway System. So that conceptual amendment is exactly what I'm looking for.
Thank you very much, Representative McCabe. I would ask the bill sponsor to comment on this amendment and the impacts it would have on the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stutes, I understand where Representative McCabe is coming from on this, but I, having participated in the Alaska Marine Highway Reshaping Group, I found that I'm not sure that this would be applicable to begin with, but if it were and there were more than one union member from one of these unions, what I found from my personal experience was listening to these union members. They want to make the Marine Highway more efficient. They want jobs. They're willing to give and take. And I think that if there were more than one member on the committee, it could very well be to the advantage of the state from the conversations that I personally have had with these members. And I'll give you one example. We have union members that currently work on the vessels who are licensed and available and capable of doing some of the maintenance that is now the state requires those vessels to go into the shipyard to have that maintenance done. We could be saving a whole lot of dollars by having the employed individuals performing that maintenance when they're tied up in different communities. So I appreciate where you're coming from on that, Representative McCabe, but I just think in this instance we might be shooting ourselves in the foot.
Thank you very much. Representative Stutes, further comments?
Kerry Crocker, staff to Representative Stutes. I'd be concerned because many of the upper-level management on the vessels themselves, the master's mates and pilots and the engineers, they go on to work in management in the marine industry. So oftentimes, they may retire from MMP, say, or MEBA for working offshore, and then they come to management. And that's the pool for the board that we're trying to draw from. And they may not even work for the Marine Highway System ever. They might be been on a ship in the Great Lakes, but they still have a ton of maritime experience. So I'd be concerned about that.
Thank you very much. Are there further comments or questions for the sponsored maker, or the amendment maker? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative McCabe, did you look into, because it's certainly my impression that the majority of people in the United States Merchant Marines are union members, that it's a very unionized workforce. And so whether you know, the barge companies have unions, and Mr. Crocker mentioned it, many of them start as a low-level person in the Alaska Marine Highways, but then they went to work for an international shipping company, or they're now a pilot of cruise ships, but they were once a member of the union. And so in an industry where the vast majority of the people have had membership in a union, and if we forbid them from being there, that we're not drawing on their professional experience.
So through the chair, I understand that. I just also have seen too often, especially in a public sector union, has way too much sway one way or the other over the contracts that are signed by management, and it results in a upside down cost to the state because there is no free market involved. And whether they were a union member, remember only 6% of the U.S. population is unionized, 6%. So that gives 94%, and if it holds true in Alaska, that gives 94% of the population to draw from. And I don't necessarily know that with the public members, we have to have that amount of experience that everybody seems to think so. In fact, sometimes too much of marine highway experience might be a bad thing. Maybe we need to get some new ideas and some fresh ideas in there. So my idea was to sort of actually have public experience in there and not all union and not all marine highway. That could bring some diversity and some new ideas to the board. So. Yes, I considered exactly what you asked, Rep. Hannon, and I think that that's exactly why we need to prevent too much union population on the board. I've seen it happen dozens of times in the airline industry, and it always resulted in an airline going out of business.
Thank you, Representative McCabe.
Well, I think Alaska's rate of unionization is in the 20s.
I believe so, second highest in the nation.
Yeah, so comparing us to the others. And again, when the majority of the merchant maritime industry is a unionized force, and it's not because they hold so much sway over wages primarily, it's about technical skills and training. And I have chosen not to engage with the presentation from the Alaska Marine Highways when they came before us, where they say the contracts are what drive it. In all of the service delivery of the state, the personnel cost is the largest cost. And it has been interesting, the Department of Transportation sort of notoriously has had very anti-union leadership, yet has never bargained any of the union components. They're bargaining wages, but they're not usually asking for changes of terms and working conditions. I believe it's the last three contracts since they've done that. So to then turn around and say, you know, that's what the problem is, when we go, well, that's sort of the management's job. If you've got terms and conditions in a contract that make it impossible for you to do your job, then you change the terms and conditions. But I'll be a no vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Sponholz had a question?
No, I don't have a question. I think I could just have a comment. I appreciate that the amendment's sponsor is trying to, you know, manage what he sees as sort of a, you know, an imbalance in the board that could potentially come forward. I don't share those same concerns, and I have concerns that if their amendment were to move forward, you could end up with essentially most of the people in the state of Alaska that actually have expertise in the marine highway system not being able to sit on this board. When we're looking at the public members of the board, You need people that have experience in marine business, procurement practices, marine personnel management, commercial service options, ship maintenance, construction, repair, fleet strategy, reliability, regulatory compliance, and risk management. And those are all, you know, areas of expertise that particularly in this sector, you know, have people that at one time or another were a member of a union. They're likely not a member of a union currently when they would be serving on this board. But to say that if you've ever served on a member, you've ever been a member of a union that worked in the marine highway system, that you should not be allowed to sit on one of these, you know, sit in one of these positions, seems like we would be just taking the expertise pool and just really narrowing it to a very small class of folks that I don't think actually would be in the best interest of Alaska. And as Representative Hannon was saying, it's not actually personnel costs that are causing most of the problems that we're running into. It's capital management. We haven't been managing our capital assets. We haven't been making sure that they're getting taken care of. We're not making the appropriate investments in them to make sure that they're actually, you know, seaworthy on a regular basis. And it's a lack of planning that's causing the problems that we're seeing right now, rather than actually labor costs. So for those reasons, I'm going to oppose this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Drummond had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know who can answer this question, but I'm just curious how many labor contracts for the Alaska Marine Highway System will be negotiated by the board that we are currently discussing.
Thank you for that. Does the bill sponsor have an answer to that question, or I believe we have somebody from the department if we need that?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, Kerry Crocker, staff to Representative Stutes. I believe none of the DOT doesn't necessarily directly negotiate the contracts, and I'm sure the department could speak to this. They always have a representative there, but the Department Administration Division of Labor Relations typically negotiates the labor contracts.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker.
Brief at ease.
Thank you very much, and I think we got a satisfactory answer for Representative Drummond from that. Are there further debate or questions regarding this conceptual amendment number two for amendment number two? All right, seeing none, I maintain my objection for this amendment number one. Amendment number two. At this point, I lost my thought. Briefity, thank you. Back on the record. So we're going to have to take a vote on the conceptual amendment to amendment number two. At this time, I would ask Ms. Buhner. Is there somebody trying to make a comment from the presentation or from online? If not, please mute yourself if you are online. So at this point, I'd like Ms. Buhner to take a roll call on the conceptual amendment to amendment number two. Ms. Buhner, please take a roll call and let us know the result at the end.
Representative Drummond.
No.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
He's absent.
Representative McCabe.
Yes.
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Sponholt. Chair Hopkins.
Yes.
Four yeas, one nay.
Thank you very much. Seeing a vote of four yeas, one nay, the conceptual amendment to amendment number two passes. At this point, I do still maintain my objection for amendment number two. And so I would like to have a roll call vote for amendment number two, unless there's further debate on the changed amendment at this time. Okay, thank you. So I would like, Ms. Buhner, would you please have a roll call vote for the new amendment number two?
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
No.
Representative Hammond.
No.
Representative McCabe.
Yes.
Chair Hopkins.
No.
Representative Sponholz.
No.
Two yeas, four nays.
Thank you very much, Ms. Buhner. Seeing a vote of two yeas, four nays, the amendment has failed to be adopted. Thank you very much. Representative McCabe, can I have a motion for amendment number three?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number three.
Thank you very much. And for purposes of discussion, I will object to amendment number three. Representative McCabe, please speak to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So amendment number three changes the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board to the Alaska Marine Transportation Operations Board. I believe this amendment better clarifies and enhances what I think this new board would or should be trying to accomplish. By amending the description of the board to transportation, it will open up the focus of current and future consideration of all transportation, in other words, dealing with all kinds of marine transportation systems. It also opens the door to the possibility of public-private partnership and or leasing or contracting as some of the marine transportation needs of Alaskans. In many cities throughout the country, they have buses or municipal transportation authorities, consider BART, the Bay Area Rapid Transit System. Use of the word highway closes the focus to a branch of transportation, or in Alaska's case, to a route structure. The term highway is very specific to road highway design. It's a noun, meaning main road, especially one connecting major towns or cities such as a six-lane highway. Other words for that would be street, road, roadway, avenue, boulevard, or expressway. The Alaska ferry system is none of these. Mr. Chair, the Alaska Marine Highway System, from its inception, was a romantic call to travel to Alaska that was envisioned to include all the roads that are included on the route, for instance, from Haines to Homer. Yet the Alaska Marine Highway System is not currently responsible for those roads or for the maintenance, upkeep, or plowing of those roads, if it ever was. So including the word highway is a misnomer. The word transportation seems to currently fit better, and it better describes what the ferry system currently does. I ask that my amendment be passed.
Thank you, Representative McCabe, for speaking to your amendment. As per the previous amendments, I would like to turn to the sponsor of the bill and see the support or opposition or questions and concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stutz, through the chair. I don't know where to start to say that I disagree with this amendment. First of all, the Alaska Marine Highway, the intent initially was, in fact, to be a road between rural communities that had no road. It was determined that a marine highway was a whole lot more cost-effective at the time than building bridges for these communities to connect with each other. So its intent absolutely was a highway. And taking the name, it is also nationally known as a scenic highway, which enables the state of Alaska to receive additional federal dollars. Taking the phrase marine highway off of it would reduce the amount of federal dollars that this state would be entitled to. And I mean, I could go on and on, but it absolutely is a highway. The difference is it is the only highway in the state of Alaska that users pay to get on. We don't have to fill potholes in our highway, but we have to make sure that our transportation mode isn't rusting out. But we pay to use our highway. currently, and it as I said, it is the only highway in the state that the users are a paying group initially. So I absolutely am opposed to this amendment.
All right, understood. Representative Stutes, do we have further questions or debate on amendment number 3? Representative McCabe.
So while I understand everything you said, Speaker Stutes, this is the name of the board, not the whole system. So it's just changing the name of the board from highway to transportation. It's not necessarily, it opens the board up to encompass or to possibly do more as a board than the just the ferry system. So if we're talking about the whole system, I get that it's federal dollars. I don't think those dollars would go away necessarily. I mean, we'd have to look at that, but it's not a highway. It is absolutely not a highway in the classic sense of the word. And I know the romance, and I know the advertising for tourism and everything else. But if we're going to save this ferry system, we need to get past the emotion and past the romance, and find ways to resolve the problems with the system. And it starts with a transportation board, with a professionally named transportation system board that could control the highway, might also control a barge system if we wanted to, or leases from another ferry, as you and I discussed a little bit this morning. So it's not renaming the Alaska Marine Highway System. It's strictly for the board.
Representative McCabe, thank you. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity. Through the chair, Representative Stutes speaking. It is a highway. It's a marine highway. So to call it anything else, whether you have a barge on it, or whether you have a ferry boat on it, or whether you have a cruise ship on it, it is a marine highway. And so I was going to make one more point about naming the board. Anyway, I will leave my comments there. I think I've been pretty succinct in them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stutes. Representative Hannon had a question.
I have a question and a comment. So in changing the name of the board, you don't think that will create some confusion over their task and directive? Because the board will have one name, yet the governance that they're directed to have oversight and planning for has a separate name.
Representative McCabe.
Through the chair, thank you. I don't think it will create any more confusion that is currently being created by calling a boat that runs on what are called waterways or ferry a highway. So that's a source of huge confusion to many people outside Alaska, and frankly, in that have never used the ferry system, is they don't understand. In fact, we tend to, because of the word highway in there, we try to compare it to the Glen Highway or the Steese Highway or some of those highways, and it's not comparable. It's a totally different animal. And I do not think that just renaming a board, the Transportation System Board, will create that kind of confusion. And in fact, I think calling it the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board limits it to strictly the ferry system, and I think we need to think broader.
Thank you. I would like to note that we do have a presentation after this that the department has worked hard to get on, and those are regarding the Alaska Marine Highway Systems as well. So, Representative Hannon, do you have a quick comment?
Well, I guess if I lived in the region served by the Alaska Marine Highways, and your board of governance is the Alaska Transportation, Alaska Marine Transportation, I might think that this board now has control over feeder airports, especially floatplane airports that are in many of the communities that are served. And I don't think we have implied in the legislation that it's going to now have access and authority to govern the variety of state airports in rural communities that are served by the Marine Highway System, or the highway management in communities like Sitka and Cake. But naming the board to be the transportation operations would imply to me that I've got the authorities to take those in.
And since we don't have a central governance board for all of our transportation, but we do have some long-term planning, I could see on down the road, if this went well, that you might integrate them all. But I'm going to be opposed to this amendment.
Understood. We have another question. It was a statement, so I'll make sure you have opportunity to close your comments before we vote on the amendment. Representative Drummond, you had a question?
Yeah, I have a question and a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'm wondering which of our ferries currently do not allow a vehicle to drive on and drive off from and onto a highway?
Answer from the sponsor?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, all of our ferries currently allow vehicles to drive on and drive off.
Thank you.
Including the LaToya?
Including the LaToya.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Mr. Crocker.
My comment is on the addition of the word intermodal through amendment number one. I wonder how much of a difference that would make in the responsibilities of this board to address other means of transportation, which is what intermodal means. And intermodal also means interconnecting to the other transportation systems under consideration.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Would you like to take a stab at that, Mr. Crocker?
I think through the chair, Representative Drummond, you know, I think the intermodal section of there, you know, addresses where the Marine Highway attaches to another highway system, and that's what we were trying to accomplish by that, if that's a good enough explanation.
Could I take a stab at it?
Representative Hannon, do you have an answer?
The intermodal plans exist already. That's what DOT does. The amendment I have is adding the Marine Board's short-term and long-term plans into that intermodal transportation plan that DOT already does, saying you've got to take these to that team.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative Sponholz had a question.
No, I don't have a question. I have a comment that this essentially sort of takes the title back to a previous iteration, and we're actually currently taking the word transportation out and replacing it with highway very intentionally. I think that was the intention in part of the bill as it all sort of, it essentially, I mean, I think it would lead to distraction and confusion about what this board is supposed to be doing, and I don't think we need to add any more confusion. We need more clarity moving forward, so I'll be opposing this. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. At this point, Representative Sponholz. Thank you, Representative Hannon. Representative McKay, would you like to speak to your motion before we vote on it?
Sure, I appreciate it, Mr. Chair. So two things. The word for the board, the description still has Marine in it, so that answers, I think, Rep. Hannon's concern. I think that transportation is a clearer way to define it and to open it up to other things. And the second thing I would ask is, what roads are there in Tenneke? We're carrying we're using a 300-foot car-carrying ferry to go to a village that has no roads. So I'm not sure that actually fits into the highway definition. That's why, in fact, one of the reasons that I thought that transportation would open this board up to more development, not less.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. At this point, I will maintain my objection, seeing no further debate. Ms. Buhner, would you please take a roll call for amendment number 3?
Representative McCabe.
Yes.
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
No.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative McKay, sorry, absent. Chair Hopkins.
No.
Representative Sponholz.
No.
2 yeas, 4 nays.
Thank you, Ms. Buhner. With a vote of 2 yeas and 4 nays, the motion has failed to be adopted. Thank you very much. At this point, I would like to open for public testimony. going to go ahead. Public testimony is now officially open. Looks like we have one person still remaining online. I believe that would be Nancy Bird. Ms. Bird, would you please put yourself on the record, state any affiliations you have, and please give us your public testimony and limit it to 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. My name is Nancy Bird, and I am a resident of Cordova, speaking on behalf of myself. I strongly support House Bill 63 establishing this nine-member Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. It is overdue for this kind of board to be created. While its establishment will not fix all of the challenges now facing Alaska Marine Highway System, we need a board with this kind of experience, and primarily to provide professional and non-political advice on how to run a successful operation. The Alaska Marine Highway System, like our road system, is not expected designed to pay for itself. It must be able to plan several years ahead. It must have secure funding and long-term capital funding for vessel replacement. House Bill 63 is a step in the right direction to repair and rebuild the Alaska Marine Highway System. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 63.
Thank you, Ms. Bird, for your succinct testimony. That's the only person we had online today. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Thank you very much. At this point, we'll look to the bill sponsor for any closing comments and questions, or answers to any questions. Rep. Stutes, Mr. Crocker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it, Representative Stutes. And I'm excited. I think this is a step in the right direction. This Alaska Marine Highway System has had many boards in the past, starting in the early 80s, I believe, and this will be the first board that actually, if this bill goes all the way, that actually has some teeth in it. It can really produce some results and make this system more efficient and more effective and more usable and more affordable and sustainable for the state of Alaska. So I'm really looking for some positive changes. So I appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Representative Stutes. At this point, I would also like to close public testimony. Officially closed. Sorry about that. At this point, without further discussion on the bill, unless there are further comments, seeing none, I'd like to see what the will of the committee is for a motion to move the bill or not.
Mr. Chairman, I move to advance committee substitute for House Bill 63, transportation version 32LS0286/I as amended from committee with attached individual recommendation and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 63 passes from committee. Thank you very much, Representative Stutes and Mr. Crocker.
And thank you to the committee.
Certainly. Brief at ease as we sign the committee report. Today, it is the intent of the chair to hear a presentation from the Alaska DOT and Public Facilities regarding four questions posed to the department about vessel replacement, budget, planning, and projections. Deputy Commissioner Carpenter and his team from the department will entertain questions from committee members during the presentation. Deputy Commissioner Carpenter, please introduce yourself to the members of the team, put your name on the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. If I might ask a question, would you like me to expedite my testimony today to try and get through this, or what is the preference of the chair?
Mr. Carpenter, my plan is to bring this back up on Saturday for further questions and discussion. So at this point, why don't you go ahead and work your way through it? You can be brief. You can move forward, but we will have time on Saturday afternoon as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. excuse me.
Do I have another one?
Well, okay. Thank you again for having us. The goal of this presentation is to provide the legislature with our perspective and the efforts given the working group's report, and also to answer the four questions, as you mentioned, provided from the committee. Work, as you know, work is underway, and we hope to make more progress with the legislature in the coming weeks. But I want to acknowledge the governor and Speaker Stute's MTAB restructuring bills as cornerstones of the future planning and implementation of the work group's recommendations. You know, the department doesn't presume to make any determinations for the restructured board before they've had a chance to, well, before the legislation is passed, I should say, and before they've had a chance to meet, assemble, and actually do their deliberative process and given their full attention to this very complex topic. So today, you know, we're going to address the questions you asked, the committee asked, as best we can. And just to go over those questions in brief, the committee asked for the future vessel replacement plan and timeline for the Marine Highway System. Again, I think that's a longer-term question that will need to be addressed by this new board. But we can certainly discuss it. It's not like it's never been a topic that's been discussed by Marine Highway before. And how will that plan impact the operating capital budgets and the fare box recovery was another question. Does the plan reflect any of the working group's recommendations? And then can you provide a 10-year or 15-year estimate of costs of continuing current overhaul and maintenance of our existing fleet versus, say, constructing new vessels? So we're going to run through our slides here with the goal of addressing the working group's report and their recommendations, and then provide a scenario, if you will, a sample plan that could materialize, if you will, if it was implemented. But it's by no means something the department is recommending or supporting at this time. It is merely a scenario, a hypothetical to say what could happen given the direction of this new board that will be implemented. So with that,
Mr. Carpenter, if you could just give me 1 second here. Representative Stutes has joined us. Thank you, Representative Stutes. Would you like to take a seat at the table? Representative Stutes, would you like to have a seat at the table if you have any questions to ask?
Thank you.
Certainly. Our pleasure to have participation. Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Please feel free to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on to slide number two, first slide, if you will. Okay, so just in brief, you know, the working group was established in January 2020. Purpose was to make recommendations of the future finances and service levels of Marine Highway. They were to consider the economic reshaping report that had previously come out. And the duties were to define the future needs, purpose of Marine Highway, ensure residents have access to essential transportation services, okay? So that was presented to the governor on October 2nd. Next slide, please.
What? Oh, sorry.
Brief at ease. Before we go, everything went off. Brief at ease.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Mr. Carpenter. You are back on the screen. I appreciate that, and we have the screen in front of us. And we are on slide two here, so you can proceed with your presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jumping ahead to slide three, you know, this was one of the key takeaways that spoke to me in the report. You know, it's on page five, the introduction, paragraph two, and it basically said, you know, that today the system operates an aging ferry fleet that is costly to maintain and operate, basically with limited flexibility. So it's really old, and we have a hard time, you know, doing what we need to or having that ability to adjust to changing circumstances, changing times, changing everything, changing needs, if you will. So that kind of struck me as a key takeaway from the report, and I wanted to highlight that. Next slide, please. So this is just a quick rundown of the underlying themes that were in the report. Obviously, you know, they identified the value of the system to Marine Highway and the coastal communities. They talked to improving reliability, reducing costs, increasing revenue, stabilizing budget, strengthening governance, and improving planning. So that was the general underlying themes. And if you'll move to the next slide, we get to their recommendations. And again, with those themes in mind, they mentioned strengthened governance. That's kind of what we see as the pivotal piece And we have a bill just as that you all have seen introduced. Improving reliability to me is essential. I think that's one of the underlying issues with the system and the public with their frustration. Stabilizing the budget planning, reducing system costs. Obviously, it's very expensive. Old ships, difficult to manage and deal. Renegotiate union agreements. And in that regard, we're just, I think, from an AMHS perspective, we're talking about management rules, things to better manage the system in a more efficient manner.
Representative Carpenter, Mr. Carpenter, Representative Stutes has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. I notice on here you don't have dependability listed, and that was seemed to be the number one concern about this working group, was the lack of dependability that the marine highway system currently has for whatever reason, whether it be money or whether it be poor maintenance of the vessels. But dependability should be at the top of this list.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, maybe I didn't word it correctly, but that to me was reliability. Dependability, reliability, I 100% agree with you. The system needs to be reliable, dependable.
Thank you, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Representative Hannon had a question.
Thank you, through the chair. Because, Mr. Carpenter, they get put on every PowerPoint that's presented about AMHS, and then it speaks to union labor agreements. So how many labor agreements do you have, and how often are they renegotiated? My recollection is the longest of them is 3 years. So why aren't they being renegotiated if you're negotiating your contracts every 3 years? Why aren't they current with the concerns and needs that the department has had? And perhaps you could just enumerate them for us.
Through the Representative Hannon, great question. They are every 3 years. We have the three marine unions, the Masters, Mates, and Pilots, the Marine Engineering Beneficial Association, which is MEBA, and the Inland Boatmen's Union, which is IBU. Currently, the MM&P and MEBA are in negotiations, if you will. They're very preliminary. There's been not a lot of progress, but they are open for negotiation at the moment. IBU, we just settled a year or so ago, and they come up for negotiation, I believe, next year sometimes for the FY23 budget. So, it's a process that takes a while. As was mentioned earlier, Department of Administration generally heads that up. Their labor relations group. Some of the items, I might ask Captain Falby to speak to them, but some of the management items are, things like port dispatch, that they're just difficult management-wise and costly, and not necessarily we're trying to take money away from people. We just need the ability to manage the system more effectively, more efficiently. And I don't have a list of the other items, but those are the kind of things that would be hopefully renegotiated down the road.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Follow up, pretty good.
Well, if Captain Falvey was there, and I would ask, how many grievances have you had in the last year from the Inland Boatmen's Union, and how many have you prevailed on? Being someone who did rights as a volunteer for a union, one of the things, grievances are filed because you're not in compliance and point to issues, then you need to figure out how to manage. And it seems to me that I hear repeatedly that there's a lot of problems, but the state is in continual grievance process over not following the contract or figuring out how to manage within it or change the items.
Mr. Falvey, are you available for a response on that one on there?
Yes, for the record, Captain John Falvey, General Manager of the Alaska Marine Highway System, through the chair, Representative, quite a few grievances. I think the crux of the issue with the grievances is how the unions interpret very complex contracts as opposed to how the state interprets those complex contracts. And there are quite a few of them.
Follow-up,
Representative Hannon.
Would you say of the many, Are you prevailing on most of those grievances or not?
I would, through the chair, Representative Hannon, I would say that we prevail on about maybe 50% of them, or we settle them.
Thank you very much, Representative Hannon. Representative McCabe had a question.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. This might be a couple questions, and maybe Representative Hannon touched a little bit on it, but first question is, how many of those grievances go to arbitration? That's what you're really asking, is how many grievances does the state win in arbitration versus the union?
Captain Falvey, through the chair, Representative McCabe, we do not go to arbitration very often. Quite often, the state settles one way or another the grievance with the union before we get to arbitration. I don't have the list in front of me, but we have prevailed recently in a few arbitrations. I will say that. I don't have that list in front of me. Sorry.
Follow-up, Representative McCabe?
Follow-up. So you do not negotiate under the Railway Labor Act. Is that correct? May not even know what the Railway Labor Act is, but it's what the airlines and the railroads negotiate under, and it prevents them from going on strike. So my point is if you're negotiating a contract and the Inland Boatmen's Union say doesn't like it, they can strike. They can shut down the ferry system, and then we have no other option because the marine highway system is a monopoly, or at least the very best, it's an oligopoly, which means there's no other avenues. So that's why the state oftentimes capitulates to the unions, because the unions hold them over the barrel. That's a public employees union. Where an airline, it's a little bit different. We can't go on strike until the cooling off period. It's this whole Railway Labor Act thing that the marine highway system doesn't fit under. And so that's what happens. That's why the contracts don't get negotiated fairly, is because the unions have a huge lever. They can just go on strike and shut us down completely.
Actually, Representative McCabe, employees are not allowed to go on strike for just any reason. Can only go on strike during contract negotiations. That's what we saw last year. Sure. You can't go on strike because you fail a grievance or fail an arbitration.
No, and maybe
Representative Stoops, did you have a question?
No.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any further follow-up questions, Representative McCabe?
Sure, and just a comment. That's what I said initially, was during contract negotiations. You don't negotiate under the Railway Labor Act. You negotiate apart from that, which allows you to go on strike. Under the Railway Labor Act, you almost virtually cannot go on strike, ever, even in contract negotiations.
Representative Stoops.
Well, I guess I'm kind of going down a rabbit hole here.
Me too.
Through the chair, Representative Hopkins and Representative, maybe you can help me. It seems to me, and particularly in relation to the Alaska Marine Highway System, like I said, having been on that working group, the unions were the first ones to step up to the plate and say, we want to resolve this. So I hear you saying that they can go on strike, whereas others can't. But I think it's almost a last resort when they're not being heard, because they don't want to be out of work. They simply do not want to be out of work. And I'm not trying to defend the unions. I'm trying to defend the marine highway system and the people that operate it. But that was my finding. So I appreciate what you're saying, and it's interesting. And you called it the Railway Act?
It's called the Railway Labor Act, which theoretically the ferry should be under, but it's a public sector transportation system, so it's not. But, it's rabbit hole, sorry. But
yeah, it certainly is a rabbit hole, but the only time that somebody can go on strike as a public employee union is after many, many years and months of negotiations and several official steps that have to be gone through, where you've reached impasse, you've been unable to have a settlement, and so it's a long process, and both sides want the system to be running, and certainly many of the employees of the AMHS are going to want to see those boats running because they live in those communities that are impacted. Representative, or Mr. Carpenter, you please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Continuing with slide five, the last two bullets were to increase revenue and our leverage our road infrastructure. If there are no further comments there, we'll jump to the next slide.
Please proceed on slide six.
Okay, so slide six, what we're going to do here is basically, given those recommendations, we're going to talk about what's the steps that are underway that DOT or again, steps that are underway, steps we want to do, we want to work with the legislature on, and steps basically working with this new to-be-established operations and planning board. So jumping ahead to the next slide, please. Okay, so steps that are underway. We want to talk about, okay, so one of the questions was, what of the working group recommendations are we, you know, striving towards, if you will, I guess was the question. So right here, in, under improved reliability, we have the Tustin Mean replacement that's currently 60% design. We put a $8.6 million federal earmark to finish design. At some point in the near future, we would need to bring in a CMGC contractor to complete that design to the 100% level, at which case it could go to construction. There's currently no funding plan in place at this moment. It's a lot of money for that vessel. We're looking at options with it on how to maybe make the price tag a little more palatable, and we're exploring all kinds of ideas on funding mechanisms as far as potentially, well, there's just ideas out there, and we're working towards that, and we'll see if that comes to fruition.
Mr. Carpenter, we have a question from Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Mr. Carpenter, isn't there federal money set aside, a federal match money? And I thought that the state had money in the STIP plan for the new Tustamina, or has that been transferred out or used somewhere else?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, correct. The TRV is programmed in the STIP right now. There is match money set aside for it. It's just we haven't actually put any construction money behind it yet, mostly because it's not ready for construction. But at that time, when it is needed, say a year or so from now, we'll need to figure out the best way to fund it, whether that's, you know, we pay for it right out of the STIP, the Fed highway money, or whether we do some other creative financing. We're looking at possible grant options with Congress. There's some build grants, some infra grants. We're looking at basically any creative options, because it is a big price tag, and we're just trying to figure a good financing plan. But you are correct. It's currently programmed in the STIP.
Follow-up?
For FY22, I believe.
Follow-up.
So are you talking about creative financing because your anticipation is to sole source it on the construction of it and having it built here in Alaska? Or is the intent to send it out for a fair bid?
Through the chair, the intent is not to sole source. It's merely to be able to make the price tag a little more palatable, instead of just having a big hit in the STIP in 1 year of over $200 million. It's possibly spread it out, the impact to, you know, again, to our federal program in some way, whether that be a Garvey bond or we try to spread it out in the STIP in some way. So, but no, we're not looking to sole source in Alaska, no. We're looking to do a competitive bid, federally funded.
Thank you.
One more quick
follow-up, absolutely.
Thank you. What, at a $250 million vessel, what would be the state's share of that for a match?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, right now there is an appropriation of $22,500,000 for the match, which is, you know, approximately 10%.
And the rest would follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And the rest would be the federal dollars.
Through the chair, yes. Yes, ma'am.
And that would be spread over what period of time? Oh, follow up, please, Mr. Chair. That would be spread over what period of time? Do you have any idea? In other words, it wouldn't take 1 year's worth of STIP funds. It could be spread out over several years.
Well, through the chair, that's what we're actually trying, Representative Stutz, what we're trying to figure out, the best way to have it in the STIP. There is a general, I believe my program development director was telling me the other day about, unless you use some techniques like advanced construction, we would have to take the entire hit in 1 year in the STIP, which is, you know, that's a big hit to the program, given the rest of the needs in the state. So again, we're looking at how we can possibly spread the costs out over multiple years and make it a little more fit a little better given the other needs out there.
Thank you. I have
one last follow-up.
One last one. Thank you. So when are you anticipating that the design might be completed on this?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, I believe we're right around a year or so out before she's fully designed. She's at 60% now. Again, we need to bring a contractor on that would potentially build the vessel, so that we're going CMGC, which is the construction manager general contractor technique, which the contractor would be on board early in the design at this point, 60%, and they would help with all the final detailed design, so that when they go to build it, a lot of the kinks are worked out. That's generally how a CMGC works, is the contractor who knows, you know, they're not just a consultant on design. They understand the actual construction part, and they're there to help finalize design.
So you, through the chair, thank you for indulging me. The plan is to continually move forward with the Testamina and not set it aside, but to continue a forward momentum on the construction of the new Testamina. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, we have applied this $8.6 million to complete design, so that's the stage we're in. When we get to construction, hopefully we'll build it. I mean, that's to be determined at the moment, but the process at the moment is get a contractor on board and finish design.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Certainly. Representative Drummond had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, just a comment. There is a bill in the works in Congress, H.R. 6422, to create a national infrastructure bank. This kind of thing hasn't been done since the Roosevelt era, and there's a great deal of excitement in the industry about this. And I have a phone call at or a Zoom call at 4 p.m., and I hope to learn more about it, and I'll be happy to share that with you.
Thank you very much, Representative Drummond. Representative Hannon had a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Carpenter, did you say there was 22.5 in the vessel replacement fund currently?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I said there's 22.5 set aside for match, but I don't believe it's in the vessel replacement fund. No, it might be. I don't want to.
Okay. Follow up.
I can get back to you.
Mr. Carpenter, if you could have that answer on Saturday, that'd be great. We don't need it this moment. Representative Hannon had a follow up.
A couple weeks ago when we first started talking to DOT, you had a sale in process of the two fast ferries, which has been completed. Can you tell me what the state's take on that was and whether that money is going into the vessel replacement fund?
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the state's take was $5.6 million, I believe, and the entire amount will go to the vessel replacement fund for future vessel replacement or major maintenance. We have an appropriation in last year's capital budget to make that happen.
Thank you.
Thank you much, Mr. Carpenter. Representative Sponholz had a question.
Yeah, so there is going to be a bunch of money coming through the federal government for transportation infrastructure. The Biden administration has made addressing our transportation infrastructure and modernizing it a top priority. And so, I think we should be thinking about making sure that, that capital and money for the Testamina could get included in that bill. And I think that, there's at least one member of our congressional delegation who's known to be a swing voter who could be influential in making sure that Alaska did very well in that process. I have a little bit of reluctance about spreading capital money over multiple fiscal years, because we've seen in previous projects the UAF had a bad experience with a I believe it was an engineering building that was sort of partially funded one year with the expectation that it would be funded the following year, and then there was fiscal issues which got in our way of completing it. But I don't know that we're gonna, that if there is this massive infrastructure package, it creates a sort of a really unique window of opportunity. But I have a, I don't know, I'm really interested in this, the project design model that you're describing, because you really need to have the people that do the construction involved in the design, so you can make sure that you're designing it so it's easy to implement and taking advantage of the expertise there. But typically, how long does it take to build a ferry like this? How long is it going to take to build the Testamina, just like in practical terms?
Sorry, I was muted. Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, Captain Falvey can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's a four-year construction window once construction begins.
Follow up. So you said that's a four-year construction window. Does that mean it it has to get built within 4 years, or it's going to take 4 years? I'm new to this committee, so maybe you could just educate me.
No, that's a great question, Representative. Through the chair, window maybe wasn't the best term. I was trying to just imply construction will take approximately 4 years, but there's not a limited window of opportunity. I didn't mean to imply that.
All right, thank you.
Representative McCabe had a question.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. So, Mr. Carpenter, I'm curious. We talked about the Fast Ferry sale, and we got $5 million total, or $5 million apiece for those two?
For the chair, Representative McCabe, it was 5.6 total, and Falvey, jump on if I'm saying wrong numbers here, but I believe that was the total. And then there was some swing engine sales, and Captain Falvey can provide a lot more detail here if you'd like.
So,
yeah, Captain Falvey, through the chair, Representative McCabe, I believe. Yes, we sold the two fast ferries for a total of $5,174,444, and we're getting ready to sell the two engines. We did some negotiating with the two engines. Quite honestly, there was some storm damage that took place to the tune of about $40,000, of which the contractor that we had under contract to look after the engines took 60% of the responsibility. The state took 40% of the responsibility. That 40% is approximately $24,000 that contractor will give us as a credit towards the docking fees for the Malaspina. Bottom line is we sold the engines for, with the storm damage included, $371,000. So we were at about 5.5, almost 5.6 million, as the deputy commissioner had indicated.
Follow up, Mr.
And the, yeah.
Follow up, Representative McCabe.
So thank you for that, Captain Falvey. So I'm interested in two things. I'm interested in the original value of those engines that we sold for, what you said, a couple $100,000. And I'm also interested in what we paid total for those fast ferries when we bought them. My memory's a little fuzzy because it was back during the Tony Knowles administration, but if I remember right, it was 60 million plus, maybe 72 million. Can you have
Captain Falvey, yes, Captain Falvey through the chair, Representative McCade, 68 million in 2004 and 2005 for the two fast ferries. They were appraised at 7 million apiece by an independent appraiser. As part of the legal settlement we had with MTU, the engine manufacturer of the original 495 engines, we paid $3 million apiece for the two what we call swing engines that were never used, that were sitting unused.
Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Falvey. Any further questions? All right, at this point, it looks like Mr. Carpenter has a phone call he's taken. Oh, there, we got him back. Mr. Carpenter, can you please, on the second point of the improve reliability and improve flexibility on slide 7, and we only have a few minutes left of this hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. you forget you're on camera sometimes and you try to multitask and you get busted, I guess.
All right, you didn't miss a beat.
So, I'm sorry, say again?
No, nothing, go for it.
Okay. Okay, so that was the TRV. The next big item, which is still in evaluation, is, you know, again, improving reliability, improving the system interoperability, flexibility, if you will, are the crew quarters on our Alaska class ferries. They are about 90% designed.
Mr. Carpenter, I'm going to go ahead and let Representative Hannon ask her question, and then Representative McCabe, and then we'll probably call it a day.
So through the chair, so the second bullet under the Alaska class ferries is currently programmed in the STIP. Can you expand upon what that means, either in money or in years?
Yeah, I can, Representative Hannon, through the chair. So basically we have a need ID in the STIP that's called ferry boat refurbishment. And it's been a desire for the Marine Highway system the last few years to get those crew quarters built. So it was programmed in the STIP, if you will. It doesn't mean a decision has been made to build them. But the money is sort of at least planned out in the STIP. Again, we're still evaluating the effectiveness and the cost benefit of the crew quarters. So no decision has been made to this point.
Representative McCabe has a question.
So thank you, Chair Hopkins. Mr. Carpenter, so I'm wondering, once if we do those crew quarters, will that turn these two ferries into cross-Gulf ferries? Or is it just, are they pretty much stuck in Southeast because of the vagaries of the weather in the Gulf?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, they do not become cross-Gulf eligible, if you will. They're not designed for open ocean, but it will provide them an ability to do routes that they currently cannot. That's what it would do.
Representative McCabe, follow-up.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. So one follow-up, and maybe it's better to talk about this. You said it was going to be on Saturday. So I am really interested in the contracts that we had with Allen Marine and Gold Belt and the short-term ferry, and I'm also going to want to talk about scheduling, like why we take a 300-foot car-carrying ferry into a village like Tenneke that doesn't have any roads, and if it wouldn't be better to contract with somebody that could do that way cheaper. And in fact, I think we have a contract with Gold Belt and Allen Marine, or we did during COVID. And I'm also interested to know why Skagway had to charter Allen Marine when your recent ferry broke down, and why the Marine Highway System just didn't do that as a matter of course. And like I say, maybe that's better for Saturday.
If we can take that back up on Saturday, that would be much appreciated.
Give you a chance. So.
Yeah, probably also has a decent bit to do with the reshaping committee that we are dealing with in House Bill 63. At this time, I'm going to go ahead and say that we ran out of time. Unless, Mr. Carpenter, you had a question that you are answered for it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't have an answer for all of those questions because there was a lot of them, but I will say the Matanuska was we determined she was eligible, or the Coast Guard had said we sail her the next day, which was yesterday, up the Lynn Canal. We got a clearance to do that, so we didn't feel it prudent to contract out for a catamaran when she was going to sail the next day. So that's what transpired there. Skagway, we alerted our passengers as soon as we could, and maybe Skagway jumped the gun. I'm not sure how to answer that, but that was the decision by me, and that's how we proceeded.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. And then one more question, heads up for Saturday, from Representative Drummond.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The Alaska class ferries, I think it would be helpful to have a history, the costs, and how we got where we are today, and that we're now considering adding crew quarters to them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative Drummond. At this time, I'm going to go ahead and shut down this committee for today. Is the intent of the chair to bring back the DOT and public facilities team before this committee on Saturday to answer some of these questions and continue moving forward. Our Saturday hearing will be at 12:30 p.m. in this room, Barnes 124. We will take up House Joint Resolution 13 by Representative Ortiz on cruise ships and the Jones Act. Are there any further questions in this committee? Seeing none, there is no further business before us today, and we are going to go ahead and adjourn at 3:03 in the p.m.